Hello and welcome to another podcast from the Sussex Cricket Museum. Today we've come away from the First Central County Ground in Hove and we've come out into a village in East Sussex. And the village which we're at, which I'll reveal in a minute, is typical of many villages up and down the country where there is a traditional green space, a cricket ground, very often a pub nearby, and maybe a church in the background. And I just want to quote, first of all, from Sir Don Bradman, who wrote this piece when he was talking about the club, which I will introduce to you in a moment. So quoting Sir Don, he said, "I cannot emphasise too strongly that the foundation, the very heart and soul of cricket, resides in the village clubs, where myriads of hard-working amateur officials provide the arterial system, feeding the test match arena." He goes on to say, and it's probably still true today, even though this was written some 30-odd years ago, "When one reads today of the enormous financial rewards going into the pockets of test players and compares them with the honorary service so unselfishly devoted by minor officials in all the countries of the world, it causes one seriously to wonder whether the scales of justice aren't unfairly weighted." Now, those comments would apply, I believe, to our guest today. We're in the village of Newick, which is in the heart of East Sussex. And for those of you that don't know Sussex, it lies midway, roughly, between Uckfield and Haywards Heath. And the person we're going to be talking to is the president of Newick Cricket Club. And he's been associated with the club for the best part of 75 years. And I'm quoting from a brochure which celebrated the 100th anniversary of the club, and this is what it says. "The first to impress me was David Wickens, who did a staggering amount of work on the ground, preparing wickets for both Saturday and Sunday fixtures. David did this work for 18 years and also found the time to captain the club for 10 of them. I was amazed when I first learnt that David's groundsmanship was a hobby, so there was no thought of any remuneration." So I'd just like to welcome you to David Wickens. Hello, David.
Hello.
And you've got a long history of Newick associations with the cricket club.
Oh, yes. Many, many, many.
So take us through how it all started for you.
I'd always been interested in cricket since my mother bought me a cricket set, me and my brother, from a high street shop in Heathfield. And apparently my grandfather was very interested in, on my mother's side, was very interested in cricket. And I suppose it just happened, really. I started playing when I was about 14. I joined the Chailey Club because they had a second 11 and a junior side. And I didn't think a lot about playing at Newick, although I watched many of the games that were up there, that were played up there. And that was the new ground then. It had only just been established, and then eventually, and of course then I was interrupted with National Service, which was 2 years, and so it wasn't until I came out of National Service about 1923 or something like that, 1953, when I started playing regularly for the club. And of course what helped was that the team secretary, I worked for Shorts, the electrical company in the village. Well, the team secretary was the foreman there. So, but he was a bit of a devil, really, because he wouldn't tell me that I was playing until the last minute in case somebody dropped out. He was cunning. And, of course, when I was down at Chailey, we used to go down there and hang around hoping for a game on a Saturday. If, you know, if somebody came, anybody was short.
So did you always get a game at Chailey?
Not very often, no. I mean, I was 14. Well, I'm not going to say only 14, but at 14, you were quite capable, really, of playing a game of cricket. And that's how I started playing for Newark.
Right.
And I didn't stop playing until goodness knows when.
When was your last game, Dave? Can you remember?
Well, I can't really remember that. No. But I did say at one time that my first recollection of playing for Newark was against Newark Park, and there was this bowler called Ted Stewart who bowled off a four-pace run, one step back and one three forward, and I'd only got my back lifted up, and he bowled me with a top spinner, middle stump, first ball.
Was that your first game?
That was my first game, yeah. and my last, well, I'm not going to say serious game, well, at the time the brochure was written, the last match of that season, I was bowled second ball, so I did say that I hadn't improved much over over the years.
And of course, Newark has a big history, doesn't it, in terms of cricket?
Oh, yes.
There's been some famous players, haven't there? Some famous people that have been involved with Newark.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Do you have any recollections of those people at all?
Well, apart from seeing John Lagringe and James at the county ground playing when I was a young man.
Right.
Obviously, I can remember them. And in our centenary year, 84, John Lagringe came up and umpired the Sussex 11, I think, when we played the Sussex 11, yes.
Right. And you got a lot of help from the Langridges at the time?
No. They was, well, I don't think we expected any help, really. I mean, they was off playing cricket and all that.
Right. So what did you do, David, as a cricketer? Were you a bowler, a batsman, all-rounder?
I think I would say I was a batsman. Perhaps a batsman and a general dog's body.
You also looked after the ground, didn't you, for a while?
Oh, yes. That when we was talking earlier, we were talking about 18 years. I did stop, but then I started up again and carried on until about 2009 or something like that. Because what happened in 2009... this is recent history. We had 4-11, so we wanted another ground, and we managed to get Temple Grove, which you might know, up on the upfield to Crowborough Road. And just previous to that, there was a club called the Armadillos that took over the ground at Sheffield Park. And previous to that, I'd said if they ever renovated the ground, I would like to be involved. Well, of course, I got involved, and then almost immediately we got this other ground up at Temple Grove. So, in fact, I was looking after three grounds.
You were a busy man then.
Busy, yeah. I used to come home and, mind you, I was retired by this time. I used to come home and have my tea and then go back up to Sheffield Park in the evening, or even up to to Temple Grove, and then also Newark as well.
Right. You've just mentioned Sheffield Park there.
Yes,
that was very much linked with Newark, wasn't it? Because it's right on the doorstep here to Newark, isn't it? Sheffield
Oh yes,
Park.
Yes.
The Earl of Sheffield.
Who
was famous for another reason, wasn't he? In that he started the Sheffield Shield in Australia.
Yes.
So, have you played at the Sheffield Park ground?
No, I've I think I did my bit with the ground, but I've been up there. Well, I spent quite a lot of time up there, and I've watched a few games up there. And we had a very good scorer in recent years, who sadly died, but he also scored at Sheffield Park, and so we have a memorial match every year. One this year it was at Newark, the previous year it had been at Sheffield Park, and his name was David Strachan.
Right. Now, you've mentioned there earlier about Newark Park. What's the difference? Can you tell our listeners what the difference is between Newark and Newark Park? Are they both grounds still in use?
Newark Park hasn't been a cricket ground for years, and I can't ever remember a cricket ground being there. But I'm sure they used to play down at Newark Park, where I've no idea. But when I first started playing, we did have an annual match against Newark Park.
Right.
And on one occasion, one of our regular and more, who was a real character, a chap called Bill Scrace, he played for us against Newark Park, and he scored, I think, 107 or something like that. And every year afterwards, Newark Park picked him so we couldn't have him.
And I think you went on a tour, didn't you? To Malta?
Yes.
With the club?
Yes.
So this must have been quite a big event.
Well, I suppose in a way it was.
I mean, what happened out in Malta? Did you enjoy your tour to Malta?
Well, yeah. Oh, yes, I enjoyed it. And the younger ones enjoyed it. And they played all their cricket on the same ground. So there was only one ground. And they had a brick sight screen, which was just a wall. Yeah.
Why did Newark decide to go to Malta, of all places?
I think there was a chap living in the village who had connections and put the man that organised it in touch with the various people. And off we went. I mean, there was one other chap of my age with me, John Young, but all the rest was young Piers Morgan, actually, came. So it was quite an experience.
You've mentioned a famous name there, Piers Morgan. Is he still playing for Newark these days?
No, we've had an annual match against his 11 up until the beginning of COVID, and then it sort of all fell apart.
Right.
Whether it'll ever be revived or not, I don't know, because he'll love this. he's getting to be an old man.
Now, in your little bit in the history of Newark Cricket Club, you mention a number of strange and funny incidents about going to matches and the transport to and from matches.
Yes.
Can you remember any of those incidents at all?
I can't remember them, but it was all hearsay, you know,
There's one particular one that interested me, which was where the kit bag was thrown out the back of a lorry.
I can definitely remember that, yes.
Tell us about that one, David.
Well, I think we played in New Haven, and we came back on the road from New Haven to Lewis, And when we got to the Holly, I think it's called, at Rodmore, out went the bag. And then, of course, before you could get it back in the lorry, we was in the pub.
So the idea of kicking the kit bag out was to stop at a decent pub, basically.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was it. Mind you, I was quite young then, I suppose, and I wasn't the instigator of it, but somebody who knew the ropes, that's what they did, yeah.
I was also reading about the President's Breakfast in, is it the Bull Pub?
No, the Oak.
The Oak Pub.
Yes.
So when the President's match took place, you had a special breakfast there, I think?
Well, that was at the Oak, because the President in that time was the landlord.
Okay.
A chap called Bob Bishop. And but it was for only his team. It wasn't for the Newark team, no. So I didn't get a breakfast. Right. No, it was only his team that got a breakfast.
Right. Now, I understand that the breakfast consisted of kippers and champagne.
But well, so I believe. I mean, I never got to see it, no.
Well, maybe they didn't win because of that. The kippers and champagne prior to a cricket match might not have been too good for them.
No.
Now, also, Newark has had a history of a couple of people taking 10 wickets in a match.
Yes.
Can you remember any of those occasions?
Oh, I can. Well, the first one I can't remember, because he was a chap called Frank Martin who took 10 wickets. I can't remember who he. It's probably in the brochure anyway, but I can definitely remember Gordon Wilkins taking 10 wickets. Brian Caldwell taking 10 wickets. Yes.
Were you playing in those games?
Yes. Yes, in fact. In fact, when Gordon Wilkins took 10 wickets, I was captain and we was having awful trouble trying to get this last man out. So I actually took him off. And which I don't know whether that caused a bit of upset or not. But anyway, we had to bring him, or I had to bring him back, and he got the 10th wicket. So that's a story in itself.
He bought you a pint in the pub afterwards, yeah. Did he?
Well, I don't know about Gordon.
So I think that game was against Findon, I think.
Yes, it was.
Another famous Sussex club.
Yes.
And then the other occasion was a game just a couple of years later. Chap called Caldwell.
Brian Caldwell.
Brian Caldwell,
yeah. Yes.
Were you in that game?
Who was it against?
Cowsley Wood.
Cowsley Wood.
Cowsley Wood?
Yeah, Cowsley Wood. Yeah. I can't remember, but I think probably I was.
Right, yeah. Well, that's quite a feat to have two of those within a few years of each other, wasn't it?
Yes.
So, now also Newark. Played in what I think it's now the Venus Village Competition, but originally was the Samuel Whitbread Village Championship and then became the John Hague Championship. I think 1977 was the best year for Newark. Were you involved in those games at all, David?
I don't know whether I played or not. Probably I didn't play, but not being good enough, I suppose, really. But I was certainly around anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
You were too busy looking after the ground and doing all
probably,
the other jobs.
Yeah.
No. Now, David, you've got a memory of a Sussex 11 playing at Newark, and I think John Langridge was an umpire.
Yes, it was the occasion of our centenary year. That whole week we had played various teams, including the MCC, and Robin Marlow was captain of that 11. And the Sussex match, John Langridge umpired. And we took a photograph of him, or somebody took a photograph of him. And the thing that stuck in my mind, or sticks in my mind, is the size of his hands. They're enormous. And in fact, there was a photograph, and it still might be in the pavilion of John there with his these enormous hands. And anyway, when the match was over, he forgot his umpire's coat. And I found it in the dressing room, and I folded it away and put it in our groundsman's hut. Anyway, he came back 2 or 3 days later and said, "Have you seen my coat and that?" And I said, "Yes, I've got it here, John." And he said, "I knew you'd look after it."
Did he still have the coins in the pocket of the umpire's coat?
No. I can't remember whether he had a sophisticated counter or not.
You mentioned there about him having big hands. I think he was a very good slip fielder. And in fact, I understand that he took 700 plus catches in first class cricket.
I believe it, yes. And his brother was the bowler, 9 times out of 10, I think.
So they made quite a good pairing, didn't they, between them?
Yeah.
Now, we've talked about the Langridges, we've talked about the Earl of Sheffield, but of course Newick was also famed because of one T. Baden Powell, who was the cousin of the Baden Powell who founded the Scout Movement. Now, in the brochure that was produced to celebrate your centenary, Baden Powell is described as a fine cricketer, lavish in hospitality and a great supporter of cricket in the county of Sussex. And indeed, he was a committee member at Sussex County Cricket Club. Goes on to say, visiting teams were always entertained to a luncheon or supper at the Bull before the games. So do you have any recollections? I mean, obviously, your era is slightly after the Baden Powell era, but can you remember anything about the Baden Powell times?
Well, I don't think my era is slightly after it. I think it was quite a time afterwards. No recollection at all. I mean, he died in 1942, and the earliest memory of the house was that it was requisitioned for Italian prisoners of war during the hostilities.
Baden Powell used to have a tenants' 11, you were telling us earlier.
Yes.
So do you remember some of those games and the stories?
It's well before my time.
The stories that were passed down from that
yes,
time.
Yes.
Tell us about those, David.
Well, one in particular was that a player celebrated too much after the game and was ill after the game, and he lost his false teeth down the toilet. And the next morning, he and his brother were lifting the covers in the garden to retrieve them, looking for the teeth, which I think they did eventually find.
Now, Baden Powell used to have a tenants' 11, didn't he?
Yes.
And I think there are some stories relating to those games. Can you remember any of those that you were told going down through the years?
Not really.
The tenants' 11?
Not really, no.
No, all well before your time.
Yeah, well before my time.
Yes, yeah. And is there still a Baden Powell representative in Newick Cricket Club? Or is there anything that still goes back to that era?
Well, there's a man that lives in the village that is son of the gentleman that used to be Baden Powell's butler. Or manservant, perhaps, would be the more appropriate. And then, of course, there is another chap that lives in the village whose grandmother was...
Any of this? His mother was the niece of the Langridges.
Right. I should say at this point that the reason we've ended up in Newick is because Martin, who you just heard speaking, came into the museum in early April with a question about the Langridge family and the Langridge brothers. And as a result of that, Julian, his friend, came to the museum to see some pictures of the family. And from that, we've been introduced to David Wickins, the president of the club at Newick. So it is an opportunity perhaps for other people who want to come down to the museum and just check out some of the relationships that exist from the past and to come and see what goes on in the museum. Now, David, we've talked about the different methods of transport to cricket matches in your era, and we've talked about the van that you used to go in. But during your era, the motor car became more popular. And you've got a couple of stories of travelling either to or from games in different people's motor cars?
Yes. There was a chap, CJG Smith, Square we called him, who was an off-break bowler. And he had a, I don't know what sort of car it was, but it had a thermometer on the radiator. And when we was going along, we all anxiously watched it to reach boiling point. And on one occasion, on the way to Street, we continued a little way up the road to Burgess Hill, and of course we had to reverse the vehicle, and in so doing it required two people on each corner of the rear and Square to reverse back and take the correct road.
And you talk in the book about another another chap, Ern Barrow.
Yes, Ernie Barrow's left-hander, scored all his runs behind the wicket on the leg side. A farmer through and through, and you never knew what you were going to find on the back seat because he might have had a couple of calves in there during the week. And then there was another chap, I suppose you'd call him a gentleman, who had on occasions, was allowed to bring his Sydney Sapphire, I think it was called, two-tone green, and there was a bit of competition to have a ride in that because it was really comfortable.
And I think there was another chap, Ern Stevens.
Yes, he worked for Shorts, the electrical people who I work for, and he was allowed to use the van, and usually the club bag went into that in later years. And the scorer, I don't know whether we spoke about the scorer, but Mrs. Marshall, the scorer, she was allowed to ride in the front, and if there wasn't enough room in the cars, the odd player was bundled into the back.
So travelling to and from games was an interesting experience in those days.
Well, you didn't go out much, really. I mean, if you went to Eastbourne, it was an adventure. So a trip out when you were a young man was quite, you know, we went everywhere and played cricket everywhere.
Tell us which other villages you travelled to for games, for away games, David.
Well, one of the places we did go to play on one occasion, and this was quite early on in my career, we went to Blackstone, where the
Cricket Academy is now.
Yeah, where the academy is. Well, of course, we knew it in that day as Farmer Allen's Field, which I think we had to get the cows off, or somebody did, before we actually played. And I visited the ground a few years ago when there was a groundsman's course there. And, of course, you wouldn't recognise it, the development that has been there.
And which other villages, apart from Blackstone? I mean, there's a lot of village cricket went on in Sussex. Where else do you have memories?
Fletching, which is just over there. Fletching, Barkham, Maresfield, Chailey, Skeinshill, everywhere.
And Chailey was the local derby, so it was a bit of a needle match?
Yes, and probably more so in my time, probably more so with Barkham and Fletching, of course. Yeah. They were all needle matches.
Now, David, you now live in a road called Cricket Field, And John Langridge explains in the booklet that when he was playing at Newick, the only part of the ground that was mowed was the wicket. So the square had very long grass. And this resulted in him trying to hit in the air on the leg side in order to get four runs. And you now reckon that where you are is the very area where he was trying to hit the ball over to.
Yes, the square was probably a few hundred yards out of my sitting room window. And when I went to school, I can remember the old pavilion, which is just over the corner, or was over the corner. I can remember that there. I can't remember cricket being played here, but the pavilion was moved, and I can't remember it being moved up to the present ground. And the roller had to be got up there. And the story is that some of the Herberts poured it all the way down through the village. And at that time, the concrete road had been prepared for the tarmac, but because of the war, it was never tarmac. So the concrete road had a herringbone fashion, a pattern on it. And, of course, the roller was clanking and banging about, and the thing was that it was a one that you could ballast with water, and they left it full of water one winter, and it froze and cracked the end off. and when I first started doing the ground up at Newick, this roller, it was a split roller. But this jagged edge left a horrible mark on the wicket. and of course, by the time that it was taken up there, it had been filled with concrete. So it was a pretty heavy old thing, I can tell you.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you have to... You talked about doing groundsmanship, but this was before the new ground came along, was it?
Oh, no. That was later. There was a chap called Brian Fletcher... and we used to go on courses and that to learn all about, you know, preparing wickets and all that. But before then, it was all come as you go, really. You know, you found out you couldn't do this and you couldn't do that. And but later on, of course, all these different seeds came in and that. Mm. And, you know, it was more scientific.
More technical.
There was a gentleman who spent a lot of his time at Lord's digging out all the plantings and that. Have you heard of him? He was quite famous, really.
No, can you remember his name, David?
No, I can't remember. But I've read somewhere about
right.
it. Yeah. I mean, I used to dig weeds out of the outfield and things like that, but, you know...
But you made sure you cut the grass across the whole of the playing area, did you? Rather than as John Langridge found it, only.
Oh yes, it was mowed by the outfield was mowed by the parish council, and then we eventually got bought our own ride-on mower. And obviously, this is after the time the brochure was produced. And we used to ride round on that. And then at one time we bought, the first thing we bought was a ride-on 36-inch mower, which ruined us financially, I think, to make sure the outfield was, you know, in pristine condition.
Yeah. Well, the long grass didn't stop John Langridge scoring a lot of runs in professional cricket, so... it couldn't have been that bad for him.
No. I doubt whether it was that long. It was probably... sheep, they nibble it quite quick, quite short, don't they? So,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it was, couldn't have been that long, could it?
Well, coming over to Newark today and meeting David and hearing his reminiscences from his days at Newark, together with all the famous people that have been involved at Newark Cricket Club, which, as we heard at the beginning, Sir Don Bradman thinks that village cricket is the beginning of all the cricket that goes on in the world. So I'd just like to say thank you very much to David for helping us out today.
Well, it's been a pleasure, really, but I think we've only brushed the top of the subject. I mean, there's so many stories I could have told, but I think we've covered the important pieces.
We have indeed, David, and thank you very much for your help today.
Thank you.